came a man that ruined us all with daylight saving time.
Clocks changed at 2 a.m. Sunday for most of the country, except Hawaii and Arizona, which meant one last hour of sleep on Saturday night. How are you feeling about it on this Monday? It's a conversation about daylight saving time on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Michael Downing is the author of many books, including Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. It's about the history of daylight saving time and time zones. He teaches creative writing at Tufts University. Michael, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm happy to join you.
Well, when I started reading about daylight saving beyond the dutiful reminders from media outlets twice a year, I saw that this whole spring forward, fall back thing can get very political very fast. There's tension. And to think Benjamin Franklin was even thinking about it back in the 1700s, this has been on our minds for a while. Why are people conflicted about daylight saving time around the world?
Well, you know, confusion breeds controversy, and the very idea that we can stick our fingers into the faces of our clocks and somehow gain or lose an hour is, let's face it, at best kind of a philosophical proposition. So I think right from the start, the idea of fiddling with our clocks to change the time is confusing.
And now, you know, most of our clocks do it for us. They're smarter than us, Michael.
Yeah, and you would think that would end the controversy, right? One of the oddities of daylight saving has always been it's really one of the few national regulations we have that forces all of us to do something mechanical twice a year. It's like being told we have to sweep our kitchen floors on a particular schedule by the federal government. That always bugged people. But, you know, with that gone, you'd think the controversy would go away. But, of course, not yet.
Well, take us way back in time. When did daylight saving time become a conversation piece? When did this get all started?
You know, really, the project begins in the early 20th century when the entire world is mostly on clock time. And a Brit who was an architect happened to be riding through central London early in the morning on a summer day when we have those early sunrise times. He, William Willett, noticed that people were sleeping through those early mornings of sunrise. And he thought this was a terrible waste of a natural resource. And he got the idea that if we push the clocks forward, instead of sleeping through that hour in the morning, if we gave it to people in the evening, they would go outside and they would be healthier human beings, and we might even save some energy. So that was really the beginning. And the British debated it for many years, often laughing this guy right out of the parliament. An odd thing happened. World War I was underway, and the Germans, having heard about this British scheme, suddenly just adopted it wholesale, humiliating the Brits who'd been debating it for 10 years. So Britain adopts it, and then America adopts it, all three of us hoping to save energy for the war effort.
Well, have we saved any energy, Michael?
We've been doing it for 100 years. This is the centennial anniversary of the first daylight saving law in the United States, and we've yet to squeeze a drop of oil out of our clocks. It's not an effective energy-saving plan, but it has turned out to be a remarkably effective retail spending plan.
So what about this retail spending plan? How have we used it to push it from a retail standpoint?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Chamber of Commerce was really the first and most important lobby on behalf of daylight saving. And as early as World War I, they noticed something, that if you gave Americans more daylight when they left work, they would stop and shop on their way home. This turns out to be a completely reliable effect of daylight saving to this day. In fact, that's why every year when we spring forward, the Nielsen ratings for even the most popular television shows go down by 10 to 15%. Americans really will go outside when we leave, when we're given more light at the end of the day.
Well, what about like the sporting industry? I also heard golf was in the mix on trying to push for daylight saving.
Well, all of sports loved daylight saving from the beginning, particularly early in the 20th century. Baseball was a big supporter because, of course, they hadn't yet illuminated their park, so an extra hour of daylight in the evening meant that more people would attend games and they'd be able to play those games a little later when people left work. No individual sport has benefited more than golf, however. I'm not making this stuff up. The Washington Post reported in the first year of daylight saving, 1918, golf ball sales went up by 20% in just that year. And to this day, the golf industry is a tremendous supporter of daylight saving, one of the principal lobbies that is responsible for the fact that we now have 8 months of it every year, because golf can't illuminate its courses artificially. They're too big. So they really rely on evening light to get people out onto the greens. Here's a simple example. In 1986, when we were debating whether to go from 6 to 7 months of daylight saving, the golf industry told Congress every extra month of daylight saving was worth between $200 and $400 million in additional equipment sales and greens fees.
That's a lot of money there.
It turns out for a small industry to be incredibly important. So their sports, recreation, and home goods stores love daylight saving.
Michael Downing is with us. He's the author of the book Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. We're learning the history, the politics of it. Do you have strong feelings about daylight saving time? Do you love it or hate it? Do you think we should even have daylight saving time at all? 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So in Florida, lawmakers voted to stay on daylight saving time all year. What do you think of this recent legislative passage over in Florida?
Well, you know, I think a couple of things. First, as is typical of the confusion with daylight saving, when this bill first arose, it was proposed because people were opposed to daylight saving. And it turns out their solution is to go on full year daylight saving. So it's typical of this legislation that we always get more daylight saving, no matter if people are for or against it. There is a history here, and there's a bit of a problem when we try to push our clocks forward for the entire year. And that's that there's a limited amount of sunlight, particularly in those months from November through, let's say, February, when we don't have enough available light to shove time around. So, for instance, what it's going to mean in Miami, if this bill actually gets the endorsement of Congress it needs, is that people won't see a sunrise in December and January until after 8 o'clock in the morning, which does the famously dangerous thing and politically dicey thing of putting school children onto very dark streets. And history tells us that one or two fatalities tends to turn this law back around.
And they need federal authority to do this.
They do, because they're not really just going on full-year daylight saving as they first proposed. When you turn the clocks ahead for the whole year, you're essentially moving your time zone, one zone to the east. So in one of the most unusual moves ever, Florida has decided it wants its clocks not to run synchronously with, let's say, New York and Washington, D.C., but it wants its clocks to run synchronously with Nova Scotia. We're essentially creating a fifth continental time zone, if Congress approves this, which is going to only add to the confusion that we've all had with our clocks.
Why is Florida pushing for this?
Well, I think, you know, first it started out as a very casual idea. The first legislator to propose it said that he heard from his barber that his children, the barber's children, were having trouble waking up when we moved our clocks ahead, and that was the presenting cause we were given for this move. But I think the real truth of it is there's a kind of resentment that has been stirred up since the beginning about the federal government telling people what to do with their clocks. And this is why Arizona never adopted daylight saving. They always felt they didn't want the government telling them what to do. So I think that political unrest that we feel around the country in all sorts of ways now might be part of the fuel for this movement.
So how is Arizona able to do it? How does that work when individual states make a decision like that?
Well, you know, it wasn't until 1966 in this country that we had a peacetime national law about daylight saving. And when that was instituted, it was called the Uniform Time Act. And it mandated that all states either had to adopt daylight saving, the federal plan, which was at that point 6 months of daylight saving, 6 months of standard time, or the entire state could opt out of daylight saving. And Arizona, from the beginning, decided it didn't want it. And Hawaii is another exception, which, of course, for a different reason. Hawaii is nearly equatorial, so they have essentially the same amount of daylight throughout the year. So it was always an option for states to opt out of daylight saving. What wasn't an option was for states to invent a new period of daylight saving, as Florida is now doing, so that they would be on it for 12 months rather than 8 months like the rest of us.
We're talking about the history of how daylight saving time came to be and how we view it today with Michael Downing. He is the author of Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. Do you have strong feelings about daylight saving time? Do you love it, hate it? Do you think it's antiquated, or do you think it makes sense? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update.
Then along came a man that ruined us all with daylight saving time. I'm a-hunting that man who first thought up daylight saving time.
In Florida last week, lawmakers voted for the Sunshine Protection Act. It aims to put Florida on permanent daylight saving time, as in no more falling back. But even if Governor Rick Scott signs off on it, the state alone does not have the authority to put Florida on its own time. It's one piece of the daylight saving time discussion on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Michael Downing stays with us. His book, Spring Forward, explores the history of daylight saving time and time zones. Getting your thoughts on changing the clock at 800-642-1234. Do you remember the time before the U.S. had uniform daylight saving time, before 1966? What was it like? Are you from a state that has tried to resist daylight saving time or try to implement its own time zone like Florida is doing now? Call in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Michael, let's talk about this time between 1918 and 1966. We had this in-between time before laws were really firmed up where everyone was on a uniform time. What was it like in that time period?
It was pretty confusing, and I think that's part of the alarm that's been raised by the Florida legislation and other states considering their own daylight saving legislation. Here's what happened. After World War I, we were on it for just a year, and it was so fantastically unpopular that the national law was rescinded. But New York City had fallen in love with daylight saving, in part because of what we saw with the department stores increasing their sales because people had light at the end of the day. So New York adopted what it called metropolitan daylight saving. That is, it just decided New York City was going to have daylight saving no matter what the rest of the country did. Soon, Boston, Detroit, Chicago, lots of cities across the country started to do the same thing. And then some states decided they would go on it entirely. So over the years, the synchronicity of the clocks completely deteriorated until in 1965, if you can imagine this, we have 48 states in the continent, and here's what it looks like. We have 18 states in the United States by 1965 who use daylight saving for 6 months a year. We have 18 other states that use daylight saving for 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 months a year, with individual cities setting their own policies in those states. And then we have 12 states that are not using daylight saving, so that the U.S. Naval Observatory, who keeps our time, actually announced the world's greatest superpower had become the world's worst timekeeper. It was impossible to know what time it was across the country.
So you'd really have to ask someone if you were specifically wanting to make sure something happened at the right time. You really, that needed to be the first question. What is the time where you're at?
Yeah, and even then, no one could answer with any certainty. So let me give you one famous example. There was a bus ride from Steubenville, Ohio, to Moundsville, West Virginia, 35 miles. It took 1 hour in a bus, and you passed through 7 different local times.
That's madness.
Not good for transportation and commerce.
Not at all. So there's been this perhaps a debate. I don't know. But, you know, some people say daylight savings time, savings plural. Other people say daylight saving time. What do we know about this S at the end of the word saving?
Well, what we know about the S is that it came about when the federal government started to try to propose this as a savings plan, plural. But it turns out that really the initial legislation was meant to be singular, which was essentially meant saving daylight. And so the singular and was meant to be the real title of the legislation. But like everything else, all of us are still confused about it.
Why do we have to work on hour increments? Why couldn't there perhaps be a half hour? Or is that getting way into the weeds?
Well, no, you're getting, instead of into the weeds, into history. I mean, it's a terrific question. In fact, this Brit who first proposed daylight saving to the parliament had a much more logical scheme, which was that every month of the summer we would turn our clocks ahead by 20 minutes instead of 1 hour all at once, which would more neatly mimic the changing amount of daylight that we had. But, of course, if you can think of the confusion people experience today with having to shift their clock forward once, imagine if we had to do it 3, 4, or 5 times every year. I don't think it would really make people happy.
You'd really have to. It would make people happy who are, you know, attentive to detail, who like details, perhaps, and maybe not other people. Is this controversy as heated and as conflicted in other countries, or have other countries calmed down, like Germany and across Europe?
Well, you know, it varies from country to country. The one place where it's never been controversial is where it began in Britain. They love daylight saving time, and they have absolutely no idea why it causes so much confusion around the world or why people are so annoyed by it. Of course, most northern European countries have even later sunrise times than we do. So they really need this to get those extra hours of sunlight, and they really benefit by them. But it has caused a fantastic amount of confusion around the world. One of the most startling examples of this was in Russia. Stalin early on got wind of this plan in the 30s and sort of fell in love with the idea. And so he put the entire nation of Russia on daylight saving time, then the Soviet Union, of course, in order to try to make workers work harder in the evening. And he did this and then forgot in the fall to tell the country to roll back their clocks. I'm not making this up. It was only discovered by a Wall Street Journal reporter in the 80s that the Soviet Union's clocks had gone through all of World War II and the entire Cold War, being off by an hour because of Stalin's mistake.
Did people there realize that, you know, that it actually took a media outlet to understand that?
It was, you would think someone would have caught on earlier, but, you know, the Soviet Union spanned 9 time zones, and there was always a confusion about exactly how to coordinate that much different time with Moscow. And so there was confusion with those clocks right through time, and no one did notice it. And in fact, that kind of confusion caused a different reaction in China, where they absolutely not only don't use daylight saving, but they don't use time zones. China operates on a single time zone, even though, if you look at it geographically, it should have as many time zones as the continental United States. Everyone in China is forced onto Beijing time.
Talking right now with Michael Downing about how time zones came to be, daylight saving time. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have strong feelings about daylight saving time? Do you have a fix? Do you think what we have now is antiquated? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Stephen now, joining us from Ridgeway. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I remember as a young child, as 9 or 10 years old, being explained daylight savings time for the first time, and it was my understanding that it was put in place to help farmers have an extra hour of daylight so they could get their crops in. I'd like to know if that, in fact, had any bearing on it or if that was just a smoke and screen story. And my next question is, I can't imagine the difficulty that the train scheduling and the airline industry and other industries that operate through multiple time zones are dealing with this, and what kind of an effect does that have? What kind of an effect does that have with this country? I'll take my answers off here. Thank you,
Stephen. Great questions, and let's first dig into farmers and what they're thinking, Michael.
It's so terrific that Stephen raises this. I think almost all of us in the United States grew up with the myth that we do daylight saving on behalf of the farmers. Here's the odd truth about this law and its confusion. The farmers, from the beginning, hated daylight saving. In fact, they hated it so much, the farm lobby is singly responsible for the reason we never had a peacetime law until 1966, and here's why. Farmers relied on morning sunlight. So here's the example that finally made sense of this to me, because I grew up with the same confusion. Let's say that the sun rises at 6 o'clock in the morning and the markets open at 9, and farmers have 3 hours of morning sunlight to get their dairy collected and their produce to market. When the clocks were turned ahead, there was one less hour of morning light, but the market still opened at 9 o'clock. So farmers had an hour less to do the same amount of work. They were vociferously opposed to daylight saving. And it's typical of this legislation that they got so confused with the law by being against it that it became, the facts got inverted, and we thought we did it on their behalf.
Mm. And Stephen's second part of his question is, how do transportation networks grapple with daylight saving time?
Well, you know, it's really an important question Stephen asks, because railroads and the need for predictable station times and coordination of time between places is the very reason we first got time zones. And so every time daylight saving, the period is changed, it costs a tremendous amount in the rescheduling of landing and takeoff times for airlines and for trains and for interstate commerce of all kinds. So that's one of the real risks with the Florida law, is changing that period will occasion a tremendous amount of cost and confusion for those, any interstate or international travel and commerce.
Stephen, thanks so much for the call. Michael, as we said before, Hawaii and Arizona don't do daylight saving time. And for years, all of Indiana, except for 10 counties, didn't observe daylight saving time. What was happening in Indiana?
Well, what was happening in Indiana was a famous amount of confusion, because Indiana is one of the 12 continental states that are divided by two time zones. There's both Eastern time and Central time in Indiana. But it got a little more confusing in Indiana, because some of the counties in Eastern Indiana were using daylight saving, some weren't. Some in the Central time zone were using and weren't. And that really is a confusion that the Uniform Time Act was supposed to prevent. Again, all states were supposed to be either on it entirely or off it. But in 1974, about 12 years after uniform time had been in effect and had been working well, Richard Nixon did something which really compromised uniform time forever in this country, because he tried, in a desperate attempt to stem the oil embargo and the energy crisis of 1973, Nixon decided the whole country should go on daylight saving all year long. And it was so unpopular an idea that he had to compromise by letting individual states choose their laws. In other words, it was the first time a state didn't have to entirely adopt daylight saving. Indiana became sort of the poster child for confusion that Nixon unleashed.
Oh, so it was kind of like they got a little bit more autonomy and they could run with it.
Exactly. And then it turns out that once you gave them autonomy, everyone within different counties and cities wanted to choose differently.
So as we look at it today, is the farm lobby still really involved in this? Is the Gulf lobby still really involved with this?
It's a really important and really poignant question you're asking. So as most of us know, the individuals, farmers, and the farm lobby itself has become less and less powerful over time. And so, no, there is no real organized opposition to daylight saving because the farm lobby isn't that strong. But here's a statistic that really is almost heartbreaking and tells us something about why we keep getting more daylight saving. By the year 2000, there were more Americans living on golf courses than were living on farms. And the golf industry has never taken its foot off the accelerator trying to press for more and more daylight saving.
So the golf industry is still fully invested in making sure daylight saving time is part of the time here in America.
Absolutely, and there's a reason for that. It just every time we go to a longer period of it, the sales for greens fees and equipment goes up again.
So here we are, and we have just changed our clocks once again. What about, and you mentioned this in Florida, that, you know, When there is darkness, there is hazards such as children getting on the bus when it is dark. Have those issues surfaced around the country?
Well, you know, they're going to resurface, I think, if Florida goes on year-round daylight saving in a really profound way, because Florida has a very tragic history with year-round daylight saving. During this period that I mentioned, when Richard Nixon, as an experiment, put the entire nation on daylight saving all year round. During the first month we were on daylight saving was January of 1974. Within 3 weeks, 8 children had been killed in auto accidents in Florida, and the Department of Education in Florida blamed 6 of those directly on the darkness that daylight saving occasioned, and he blamed the death of 6 school children directly on daylight saving. California soon had 5 or 6 accidents, and it started to happen across the country. So whether or not it was statistically significant, those deaths of children on dark streets early in the morning was very politically significant, and Nixon had to scotch the plan almost immediately.
So where does that leave us today?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the confusion for us today is that people fell in love with daylight saving by the middle of the 20th century. And part of the reason was the social benefit, which is absolutely real. That is, it encourages people to go outside at the end of the day. There are health benefits associated with that. And, you know, it probably better for us to be outside than watching television for an extra hour every night. But one of the other lobbies that really loves daylight saving, strangely, given the fact that we thought we were saving energy, is the gasoline lobby.
Mm.
Because it turns out when Americans go outside and go to the park and the mall, we don't walk. We get in our cars and drive. And the petroleum industry has known since the 1930s that daylight saving increases gasoline consumption. So, of course, this makes it an energy loser as a policy. But I'll give you one small example. When we were going from 7 to 8 months of daylight saving and the bill finally passed, the National Association of Convenience Stores launched what it calls its annual gift bag giveaway for Congress on Capitol Hill, and it is specifically to thank Congress for daylight saving. And you think, what's the link between convenience stores and daylight saving? Here's the deal. 75 to 80% of the gasoline Americans buy is purchased at pump-and-go convenience stores. So that's why the National Association of Convenience Stores loves daylight saving.
Talking right now with Michael Downing, author of the book Spring Forward. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have strong feelings about daylight saving time? Do you love it or hate it? Can you see an economic impact to daylight saving? Does it impact your business in some way? Call in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the conversation after a check of the news. You might have needed some extra coffee this morning. Perhaps your circadian rhythm is a bit out of sorts. Blame it on that leap forward. Florida lawmakers want to stay on permanent daylight saving time. They think it'll improve the economy. They think it'll improve public safety and mental health. We're having a conversation about how daylight saving time came to be, what we think of it today, the politics, the attitudes, the science. Michael Downing is our guide. He's the author of the book Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. Getting your thoughts as well in the mix at 800-642-1234. Is this a harmless shift, or do you see bigger issues, bigger consequences in play as we change the clocks? Does it impact your business, your family? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dave now, who is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was just wondering, and I probably could Google this, but I was curious to know if there's a reason that we turn the clocks back on Saturday night instead of maybe just do it Friday and give people those, you know, another an extra day to kind of readjust, if you will, and maybe hopefully remember that it actually happened, you know, because a lot of people in this church or whatnot on Sunday mornings, but...
Well, Dave,
why Saturday?
Yeah, Dave, good question. Thanks so much. Why Saturday night or Sunday 2 a.m., Michael?
Well, it's really a great question. And there's, again, just everything related to this is so confusing and so complicated. So here's the deal. The reason we do it at 2 o'clock in the Sunday morning on late Saturday night was really on behalf of the railroads when we first instituted this policy, because that was the moment when there were the fewest number of trains running. And, of course, daylight saving creates a tremendous amount of confusion on train schedules, because if you think your train is supposed to arrive in New York at 8 o'clock, it's not going to arrive till 9 o'clock. And so they have to stop the trains for an hour. So that's why we do it at 2 in the morning. But the question that Dave is asking, I heard him mention the confusion with Sunday and church, is ridiculously important because of this. Typical of this legislation, the first experiment with daylight saving during World War I, we did it, of course, 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. Unfortunately, that turned out to be Easter Sunday. So for across the country, thousands of people were late to Easter Sunday services. And this absolutely hardened what came to be known as the evangelical opposition to daylight saving, because they accused the government of taking us off of God's time and putting us on clock time. Mm-hmm. So that time we do it has proved to be a real problem.
Dave, thank you so much for that. Let's go to Rick in Oshkosh. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. Good morning, Dave. Great book. Never thought anybody would have a book written like that, and it's very fascinating, especially about the Soviet Union and all their time zones up there. But we have another problem up here in the UP, we call it, the upper Michigan Peninsula, because they're actually in the Wisconsin time zone, only they have to even get up another hour earlier in the morning, similar to that condition in Florida where their kids are standing out there in the dark, unless I don't know about, I guess my question would be, Is that what's happening in the UP?
Michael, what about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan?
Yeah, the Upper Peninsula has a real problem being in the western part of its time zone, and so it sees very late morning sunrise times. And in fact, that's part of the country, like West Texas, like a lot of other places that are in the western part of their time zone, which have really suffered as Congress has extended daylight saving from 6 to 7 to 8 months. Because in Grand Rapids and other places, people don't see a morning sunrise in those really early spring or late winter months until long after 8 or 8:30. And if you push it out to a year, as Florida is proposing, you know, people are going to have even more dramatically late sunrise times. In the Upper Peninsula, they wouldn't see the sun on full year daylight saving until after 9 o'clock in the morning. So that has a real effect not just on school children out on dark streets and commuters, but it has an effect on energy consumption, particularly in civic buildings that have to be heated up in order to, you know, let people in. So he's pointing out a problem with the original time zones, really. Most time zones were drawn to try to put the major part of the population at the center of a time zone. But, of course, they haven't been revised. And 100 years later, our demographics have really shifted. So people end up in very peculiar situations in their time zones.
So, Michael Downing, what on earth got you interested in this topic in the first place to write a book on it?
I think that's a very good question. I ask myself every year. You know, I'm a novelist basically by trade, and I grew up with the myth that we do it for the farmers, and this is the simple truth. One year I was putting my finger into the face of my clocks at home, and I thought, how in the world am I assisting American agriculture by doing this? And of course, the first fact I discovered when I did a little research was that the farmers hated it, and the one thing I knew about daylight saving was completely inverted. And it turned out, every time I scratched the surface a little deeper, everything everyone thought they knew about daylight saving was completely inverted. And this is the absolute truth. I started to read the congressional hearings over the years. You know, this has tied up time in Congress for now 100 years. Those hearings are the greatest comic novel of the 20th century. And I just couldn't resist once I got involved.
Let's go to Melinda now in Green Bay. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, good morning. The last caller kind of addressed my question, but I guess I'm a teacher, and I can guarantee you that my first hour class today is going to be pretty dead, pretty much a waste of time just trying to get people to keep their heads up. And I'm not a real big fan of the switch, but is there some compelling argument against just staying on one schedule all year long? For a teacher, the big problem is just that the kids are droopy for a couple of days at the beginning of each one. But is there some kind of compelling reason why we have to change?
Melinda, thanks. Michael?
Well, I think Melinda's asking a really important question. Of course, that was the very idea the railroads had in 1883 when they invented standard time, is just let's have one time and let's have it be reliable. But once daylight saving got introduced, again, in the vain hope of trying to save some energy, here's what happened over the next 50 years. Americans started to feel it was sort of their God-given right to get a little more evening suntime in the evenings when after the winter had passed, that we started to feel we were owed those late summer sunset times. And so that's when the conversion process happened. And that's what we're stuck with, this problem of wanting to have those late summer sunset times, but not wanting to have dark mornings. And the problem, you know, Congress, every time they increase daylight saving, says that they're going to give us more daylight, but the problem is they can't give us more daylight in the winter. There's a limited amount. So the compelling reason really was the attempt to save energy. The failure of that was replaced by the social delight we have, most Americans, at more evening sun time in the hot months. And we've never been able to reverse the policy.
Do we know what impact it has on mental health? Are there studies there?
Well, you know, I think, like everything else with daylight saving, there's a lot of speculation and very little significant statistical work. But many people who experience seasonal affective disorder find the switch beneficial because they have more sunlight when they are awake, right? So that they like that. But conversely, Floridians may find that they're going to wake up because of year-round daylight saving to darkness early in the morning, and that may be bad for mental health. You know, daylight saving over the century has been credited and blamed with just about everything. I mean, we were told that it was going to give us better produce that would be crisper because the dew hadn't dried off. I'm not making this up. That's what Congress tried to tell people in the 1920s. And then people in the Midwest, when we first went on daylight saving, wrote to their newspapers and complained that their grass on their lawns was burning out because they just had too much sunlight with daylight saving. So it tends to breed confusion, this law.
So was Benjamin Franklin on to something in the 1780s?
Well, you know, like everything else, Benjamin Franklin almost invented daylight saving. He seems to have managed a lot in his lifetime. And it's often considered a joke what he proposed. He was in Paris. He noticed the same thing that was noticed almost 150 years later in Britain. He noticed Parisians slept through the early morning sunrise times. So Franklin really did propose that the
Parisian government should blast off its cannons at sunrise to wake up all the lazy Parisians. This didn't go over really well with the Parisians, but he was on to the idea that later became daylight saving. The problem was, when Franklin was alive, of course, most of the world was not yet on clock time. We hadn't gone mechanical yet, so Franklin couldn't quite invent the modern policy.
Well, here we are today, 2018. What would you tell lawmakers as they grapple with this issue still today, 100 years later?
Well, let me be really clear. No lawmaker is the least bit interested in what I have to say because no lawmaker seems to want to understand this policy. But I would say, oddly, in 1966 with the Uniform Time Act, Congress got it just about right. 6 months of standard time, 6 months of daylight saving time during those months when we have a lot of available light so we can afford to shove it around from morning to evening. I think that was a remarkably smart compromise that gave us the social benefit of daylight saving. And unfortunately, since then, it's been compromised out of existence.
Well, Michael, this has been enlightening, such a blast. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
I'm so happy for the invitation.
Michael Downing is author of many books, including Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. We've been talking about the history of daylight saving time and time zones. Michael Downing teaches creative writing at Tufts University. This hour, The Morning Show, was produced by Colleen Leahy and Nyasia Ellison. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on daylight saving time, you find it on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.